Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We are entering the final 2 months before the presidential election, November 8th. 62 days and counting. Donald Trump this weekend in Detroit trying to court minority voters. Hillary Clinton has been strong in the polls, but the latest numbers and headlines are saying it's quite close. The stakes are being described in apocalyptic terms for the country, for democracy. This hour On Point, the final stretch to the 2016 presidential election. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you see unfolding right now in the campaigns? How do you see the stakes? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will check in this hour with reporters in the key swing states of Florida and Ohio. But first, joining me now from Washington is Eli Stokols, national politics reporter for Politico. Eli, thanks very much for being with us today.
Sure, Tom. Good to be with you.
So the polls I have seen said Hillary Clinton with a comfortable lead for a while. Then last week, the message was tightening. The latest headline I see on CNN is dead heat. What do the polls say at this point, Eli?
Well, there's the meta-narrative of the polls, and then there are sort of, you know, the things that have not changed over time, and that is that Hillary Clinton still has a much easier path to 270 electoral votes. The map still does set up much better for her, and she leads in most of these states, with the exception of four that are still very close, Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania.
You see dead heat. And I think the polls that came today are a wake up call in some ways for Democrats. It's not that Trump has really, it's not that he's growing his support so much. He's still stuck in the low to mid 40s in almost every national poll. He's still really getting killed with educated white voters. And there are a lot of red states from Arizona to Utah to Georgia that are very close or that are also dead heats that he is going to be playing defense in those states rather than, contesting other swing states. There are a lot of swing states that are out of reach. Colorado, Virginia, for example, look to be firmly in Clinton's camp. But there has been enough of a narrowing over the last week or two, really, since Trump did bring in a new campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, has, you know, for the most part, limited the self-inflicted wounds, the unforced errors, has tried to stay more on message. And really, I think the biggest thing that explains all of this is the news coverage on Hillary Clinton has been increasingly negative. After the convention, it was all positive. Then there were all the stories about Trump and the Gold Star families that compounded the damage for him, made it worse. And really, in the last week or two, you know, as Trump has started to clean it up, and it is, you know, probably accurate to say that he gets graded on a curve given how dysfunctional his campaign has been for a long time. But as he has improved his performance somewhat on the trail, Hillary Clinton, you know, the news cycles have been dominated by, you know, little drips of new revelations related to the Clinton Foundation, related to new emails that have been uncovered. And there has been no smoking gun found. There has been nothing, really damaging. But, you know, there's a little more smoke coming from some of those little stories. And I think that that has served to maybe bring Hillary Clinton down a couple of points. And that is why you're seeing a little bit closer race here on Labor Day or after Labor Day.
Eli Stokols, standby in Washington. Jennifer Duffy joins us as well right now, senior editor at the Cook Political Report. Jennifer, welcome back. Great to have you with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Do you see this on this the day after Labor Day as a real race? I'm seeing dead heat in the latest headlines off of a CNN poll. How do you look at it?
You know, I think that the national numbers have started to settle down post-convention. I'm a little dubious of those CNN numbers. I'd like to see them replicated by another pollster, except that we're really not looking at a national race anymore. I mean, this race has really come down to 10 to 12 states, the so-called battleground, and whether or not Trump has a shot at getting to 270 electoral votes, which is needed to win. And, you know, there is a path, but it's a narrow one. It's very uphill. Clinton is in a far better position when it comes to the Electoral College.
Can you describe to us this gap in white college educator voters that Donald Trump is seeing as opposed to what Mitt Romney saw 4 years ago? His numbers are way, way down. Describe that.
They are down. You know, it's interesting that Republicans have always had something of a lock on the white vote, generally and specifically white voters with college degrees. I mean, first, Trump lost women voters with college degrees, and I think it has to do a lot with a lot much of what he has said about women, some of the things that he's said about a lot of issues that they care about. And the real stunning part to me is that he is down, but by much less among white college-educated males. If he cannot carry that demographic, winning is impossible.
But it's the women where the biggest drop-off has been, Eli, among the white-educated, including among Republicans?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the problem and the consternation the Republicans have had for a long time with Donald Trump. He just hadn't been able to really soften his edges. I mean, there were so many comments with women, and, you know, you can go back and play the tapes that Hillary Clinton's campaign has, you know, all the tapes of Trump on the Howard Stern show for years and years, talking about women in really misogynistic terms. There's that. And then there's the damage that Trump has done since starting the campaign, the Megyn Kelly comments. I mean, there's so much there. And I think it's also just the bombast, and it's not even the comments. It's not limited to just the comments that he's made about women. It's the way he talks about, you know, has talked about, I know he's tried to clean this up a little bit of late, but the way he's tried to sort of, you know, shun political correctness and talk about minorities or talk about the country in such black and white terms, everything is a mess, everything's terrible. It's just, you know, it's just not something that is going to hold much appeal beyond, you know, sort of the frothing anger that is held, you know, by older white males and by sort of the far right reaches of the Republican base. And that's why it's not just, you know, he's not just struggling with women voters. He's struggling with soft R Republicans. He's struggling with, you know, suburban voters, the ones that Marco Rubio focused his campaign on. There maybe not have been enough of them in the primary for Marco Rubio to get through that. But, you know, in terms of a general election, that's where the money is. And Donald Trump is really struggling to reach minorities, educated voters, women voters. I mean, there are just so many little demographic subsets here that he struggles with, you know, even with the sort of lackluster or the antipathy that a lot of voters have towards Hillary Clinton or not wanting to see another Clinton win. You know, in spite of that, Donald Trump has really not been able to capitalize and grow his number and expand his base because of just kind of the approach that he's taken from the start.
Jennifer, Hillary Clinton has her issues. Eli's mentioned several of them, the sort of drip of headlines coming out about the Clinton Foundation and more. On the other hand, such big issues have been raised around Donald Trump from Democrats, but also from Republicans, saying this is a man who would be a threat to democracy, a threat to racial harmony in America, a threat to fundamental American values. Is that argument of Donald Trump as a threat to American values, the American system, has that taken hold? Can you tell?
Oh, I mean, you know, absolutely. I mean, I think it's interesting that one of the Clinton campaign's ads that I have seen most frequently in states has to do with children watching him on television and what they're hearing. And so that is, I think that is a big part of his problem. And frankly, you know, somewhat like the loudest voice in the room gets the attention, so do the bigger problems. I think that absent all of the controversy Trump manages to create almost on a daily basis, there would be a lot more negative press for the Clinton campaign over things like emails and the foundation than there has been. It's just been drowned out by Trump.
Let's go to our listeners. Matt in Austin, Texas. Matt, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Basically, my comment is that I feel that Trump's narcissistic personality disorder is what's going to sink his campaign. Ultimately, he's not going to be able to hold back from giving his true opinions about things, and his wavering on issues is merely an attempt at damage control. I don't feel that he's qualified for the presidency. He's never held public office. The people who have done business with him have been shorted by him on a number of occasions. And I just feel that Clinton is much better prepared for the office. He has more real frontline experience than Trump.
Matt, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Jennifer, here we are, the day after Labor Day. Can Democrats count on that dynamic, which even Trump's own supporters say has hurt him so far in the campaign? Can they count on that in the home stretch to the actual election, that Donald Trump will, with fiery comments or just kind of right off the page comments, take himself out of contention?
I think he's done a good job of that so far. I can't believe that Trump is going to change. I mean, the last set of changes in the campaign followed a desire to let Trump be Trump, and we know what that looks like. So again, there are voters who have real questions about whether they can trust Clinton, whether she's honest. At the same time, they find her competent, intelligent, and very qualified to take the highest elected office in this country. They don't feel that way about Trump.
So, Eli, do you think Democrats can count on Donald Trump to, keep up with the pop-offs that have given him his own campaign so much trouble? Or are you seeing a new discipline on that front?
Well, I mean, again, we're grading him on a curve. He has been slightly more disciplined over the last couple of weeks. They put him on a teleprompter. He doesn't ad-lib at the rallies for, an hour and a half anymore. So he is, slightly more disciplined when it comes to his message. I think, what you've seen from the Clinton campaign over the last couple of weeks, that, the sort of limiting press appearances, not really having press conferences until yesterday, campaigning very little. You can see they're confident about where the race is going, but they understand this guy's a chameleon, and so they're a little nervous about what he might do in a debate and what he, and how short people's attention spans might be. Their job is to remind folks of the entire Trump body of work over the course of the campaign and to make sure that any changes or moves to the middle at the end of this are seen for what they are, which is political, not representative of the full Donald Trump.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the race for the White House in the home stretch now, 62 days until the November election, how Clinton and Trump are campaigning, how voters see their choice at this point. Jennifer Duffy is with us, senior editor at the Cook Political Report. Eli Stokols is here, national politics reporter for Politico. You can join us this hour. Can you believe it's just 2 months now until this decision is made? Is your mind made up? Are you enthusiastic about your candidate? And how do you see the stakes in this election, presidential election, for the country? Over the Labor Day weekend, both candidates out there, of course, along with their vice presidential candidates and plenty of entourage. Hillary Clinton welcomed reporters, imagine, onto her new campaign plane Monday in Westchester, New York.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Welcome to our big plane. It's so exciting.
275 days and counting since she's had a formal press conference, but she did stride through the reporters on that plane. Donald Trump in Canfield, Ohio, Monday said he'll revive the U.S. economy. Straight familiar Trump.
We're going to bring jobs back to Ohio. We're not going to make these horrible trade deals anymore.
You've got headlines out today saying dead heat in the national polling. Of course, it comes down state by state for the Electoral College votes into battleground states. But even there, you've got now the Washington Post looking at Donald Trump with small edges in two expected battlegrounds, Ohio and Iowa. In Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Democrats have won each of those in six consecutive elections, but it's close there. Eli, Jennifer, stand by. In a moment, we'll go to Florida and look at what's going on there. A quick call from Michigan, where it's said to be close. Tony in Macomb, Michigan. Tony, you're on the air.
How you doing, Tom?
Okay, what do you see?
What I see Trump signs. I do not see Hillary signs anywhere. Okay, I've kind of traveled through the state. We have a place up north. I have not seen a Hillary sign. Not saying they're not out there, but they're not supportive. And the people like myself that support Trump, is he the best person on our, possibly, maybe not, but he certainly, hopefully, is going to change things in Washington. And that's what everybody I know and talk to wants.
And so you're a Trump supporter, and you see Trump signs. You don't see Hillary signs. What part of the state are you in geographically, Tony?
Just suburbs outside of Detroit.
Right. And there he was.
Macomb County is one of those kind of bellwether ones. It kind of flops back and forth. We have a Democrat county guy, but then we have Republican Candace Miller's from my town, from my area.
Tony, why are you going toward Trump? You've got a lot of critics who say he'll take this country right over the edge. He doesn't understand democracy. He doesn't understand the diversity we've got here. He wants to go back to old white supremacist kind of days. You know that line of critique, and yet you're for him. What are you thinking?
You know, I'm a college-educated person. Yep. I just retired. I follow politics pretty well. I just really do not like Hillary and everything she stands for. I just want change. I want politics in Washington to change, and it's not going to happen with Hillary or anybody like her.
Tony, I appreciate your call very much. Eli Stokols, Jennifer Duffy, let's plunge right down to Florida, which is in play here. Adam Smith joins us from the Tampa Bay Times political editor there, joins us from St. Petersburg today. Adam Smith, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Florida, always a key state, and here we are, national polls still favoring Clinton, but it all comes down to the battleground states. How does it look in Florida?
Well, it's Florida, so it looks close. It almost always looks close. It's virtually a dead heat. I think last I saw from the polling averages, Hillary was up by a little under 3 points, and by all indications, this week we've got Hillary in my neck of the woods today, Bill Clinton in Orlando tomorrow, Donald Trump in North Florida Friday. So this is obviously a state that they are both fixated on.
We've read that Donald Trump has very little campaign infrastructure in Florida. What is the situation there? And if that's the case, what's driving him to stay relatively close to Clinton?
You know, that's a good question. Florida is such a big state, 10 TV markets, that it is not typically a state. It's not like a New Hampshire, which is basically akin to a county in my neck of the woods in terms of mm-hmm. electorate. But so ground game is not extraordinarily important, but in a neck-and-neck race, which Florida tends to have, it can be important. What is driving the strength of Trump against Hillary? It's a little hard to say. I think, you know, a lot of voters, just like the fellow who called from Michigan, just want change. And the status quo is not great. Our economic statistics look decent, but on the ground here, there's still a lot of anxiety about the state of the economy.
And what about the Clinton campaign and its message, both its positive message about what she would like to do and its negative attacks on Donald Trump, you know, describing him as a threat to American values and more?
I think it's the negative message that people are hearing more than anything else, which is just essentially Donald Trump's temperament is too dangerous for the White House. And that the markets that I've seen where the most TV ads are airing or the most spending is going on, there's number one, Orlando, number two, Tampa Bay. And the ads that we see here overwhelmingly are anti-Trump ads, mostly using Trump's voice, saying some of the more inflammatory things that he said.
Jennifer Duffy, you're watching this from Washington. Adam Smith is right there on the ground at the Tampa Bay Times. What's your question about Florida, Jennifer, when you look out toward the general election?
Well, my question about Florida is pretty simple. If Trump is to have any shot at all, Florida is a must win. What I'm curious about, though, is whether Florida is going to show us a little bit of return of split ticket voting. In the polls we've seen, Senator Rubio, who's up for re-election, is running ahead of Trump in just about every poll. And I'm wondering if Adam and his colleagues encounter voters who really do intend to split their ticket.
But Rubio is running as a Republican, so where would the split ticket come in?
Well, Republicans who actually vote for Clinton and then vote for Rubio, and I suspect there may be some Democrats who vote for Clinton and vote for Rubio.
I see. How about it, Adam?
Well, it is a good question, and it's a very interesting dynamic because Marco Rubio has, in a sense, pretty effectively played it both ways. He's not exactly fully embraced Donald Trump, and everybody remembers the name-calling that was going on when they were both running for president, but nor has he totally distanced himself from Trump like say, Jeb Bush has. And I think this is probably more theory than something we could quantify, but I think there's a reasonable likelihood that Marco Rubio could actually help Donald Trump in places like Miami-Dade, huge Hispanic population where Trump is very unpopular and Marco is very popular. And Trump could actually help Marco Rubio in North Florida, the Panhandle area, where Trump is fairly popular and Marco Rubio less so. But that is one of the bigger mysteries in Florida that a lot have people on both sides of the aisle scratching their heads. In a way, like Nevada, I'd say that, you know, this is a state where 30% of the electorate is likely to be non-white at least, and so on the surface, one might think that should be a big, big, big advantage for Hillary Clinton, and yet that's not showing up in the polls yet.
Adam Smith, stand by there in Florida. Let's go over the border to Georgia, Atlanta. Kelly's calling. Hi, Kelly. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for calling. I'm taking my call.
Yeah.
I think the Clinton campaign really has every reason to be nervous. I've been traveling in Ohio, Maryland, the suburbs, and I'm talking to people. It's not just the kind of angry, unemployed male who's voting for Trump. A lot of these people are voting for Trump, like engineers, and then these folks. But they're not talking about it. They're kind of quietly, kind of coming over to the Trump side. It's fascinating to see.
Where do your sympathies lie politically, Kelly?
I have to say, I'll probably vote for Clinton, but again, not thrilled about it. So I'm in that camp of not really thrilled about the Clinton campaign, but I'll probably vote that because it's the lesser of two evils. I just could not bear to vote for Trump.
Kelly, I appreciate your call from Atlanta. Eli Stokols, are the polls missing something here? We got their calls from Georgia and Michigan saying, you know, people who are driving around looking both parties now, seeing a lot of Trump support out there, Clinton should be nervous.
Well, I think Jennifer's right that, you know, with the CNN poll, we should probably see that replicated in a couple other national surveys before we completely buy into that. But I do think that by and large, you know what the good polls are, and they have more or less been pretty accurate over the course of the entire cycle. I mean, I remember going back into the primary and Donald Trump, who obviously we know is fixated on polls and dismissed any poll that showed him losing and loved talking about all the polls that showed him ahead. You know, there was a lot of skepticism among some of the media about, you know, the polls in New Hampshire showing Donald Trump with a huge lead heading into the primary there. And lo and behold, he won by, you know, a huge margin, as was reflected and predicted by the polls. So I think generally pollsters who have been doing this a while have a pretty good sense of where things are going. And I think what we've heard from the last couple of callers is a good reflection of where things are right now, which is that this is a lesser of two evils election. And people have a lot of reservations about both of these candidates. And I think, you know, if it is a change election, that's obviously the message that's what Donald Trump wants to harness. That's what he wants to embody is change. And I think that it is a tough sell for a lot of people because it's not just change, right? It's too much change, too much uncertainty with Donald Trump. There are a lot of people who just can't get there with him. But, you know, Hillary Clinton is not thrilling to that many people either. And so I think the election is going to remain pretty close. And, you know, what you have in terms of, I mean, it's a personality contest, right? And two personalities that people are not wild about in the middle in terms of swing voters who generally decide elections. And for all the voters that sit out there and say, well, I want to hear more about policy, you know, it doesn't really seem like you do because Hillary Clinton has offered fairly anodyne, careful policy statements. They have not really broken through or consumed a whole lot of, you know, the media's focus. And Donald Trump's policy, you know, changes with whichever way the wind is blowing. And so, you know, policy is not really, again, the focus of this campaign. It's personality. And it's really difficult for some voters to decide because they're not thrilled about saying yes to either of these.
Well, when you say personality, I don't know, dry policy, maybe that's tough in a campaign season, but just personality. I mean, there are certainly very different views of the world and maybe even of America itself that get articulated in these two campaigns. Adam Smith in Florida, if Florida is tight and gets tighter, if it comes down to a close election, are your logistics in order? We all remember the hanging chads of way back that the whole nation's contest hung on in the 2000 election. Donald Trump is already saying if he doesn't win, it's about some kind of malpractice at the polls. Are your logistics in order in Florida?
Well, if the election is going to be screwed up, we're pretty likely to do it here in Florida based on history. But No, I think our last election was fairly smooth. You're at the mercy of 67 different elections officials. Some have a record of consistently botching, and most don't. But in a close race, yeah, I'm certainly not going to promise that you're going to have our results right away. So Florida is not the first place to be looking for the results, I'm afraid.
Adam Smith is political editor at the Tampa Bay Times, joining us from St. Petersburg, Florida. Adam, thank you very much for being with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Let's go to another crucial state. We were there for the convention. We'll go back right now. Cleveland, Ohio. Henry Gomez joins us, chief political reporter at Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Henry, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure.
So what's the situation in Ohio as we speak today? 62 days out from the election. How does it look?
Well, the polls look very close. There's even been some indication in a few recent ones that Trump has closed the gap. Clinton had been up anywhere from 3 to 6 points in the polls coming out of the two conventions. Trump seems to have narrowed that a little bit. But I've been focusing and looking a lot more closely at the organizations these campaigns have, because having covered the election 4 years ago, it really seems to matter when it comes to getting out the vote and early voting and in November. And for months now, Hillary Clinton has been way ahead of Donald Trump and the RNC, and they're still unable to completely play catch up.
We, of course, know that your governor there had no interest in helping Donald Trump. Is that still the case, John Kasich?
It is still the case. You know, he hasn't endorsed Donald Trump, and John Kasich controls the Republican Party machine in Ohio, and that shouldn't be understated for what that means. It means that most of the top political operatives in the state are unwilling to work for Donald Trump's campaign or to work in coordination with it in any way. Some of the top talent from Kasich's two gubernatorial wins and from his presidential campaign have refused to sign on with Trump. They're more singularly focused on Senator Rob Portman's reelection race, which has been a windfall for Portman, but it's really hurt the Trump campaign and the RNC's efforts to put a professional operation on the ground here.
Trump was over the weekend at a black church in Detroit. Where has he been campaigning in Ohio itself? What are the voters he's appeared to reach out to?
You know, he's kind of been all over the place. He has not hit the big three as much as Hillary Clinton has: Cincinnati, Columbus, and here in Cleveland, where I'm based. He's been focusing a lot of his efforts on the eastern and southeastern portion of the state.
What does that mean?
Until recently, it was a Democratic area, but in the last few elections, it's trended Republican. It's the white working class voters that Trump has been speaking to all along. Part of it entails Ohio's coal country near the West Virginia and Pennsylvania borders. But here's the other thing. It also provides the smallest share of the statewide vote in Ohio elections. So while he's spending a lot of time there, investing a lot there, the reward may not be enough to really make the difference in a close Ohio race.
We've got calls coming in from Ohio. Linda in Medina, Ohio. Thank you very much for calling. You're on the air, Linda. What do you see?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
It really disturbs me a little bit that Trump is sort of treating this all like a reality show. And just because he's learned how to read the teleprompter and he's behaving a little bit better, that's still all about just winning a game to him. But I think we're making a big mistake if we don't remember that this is real life. In Ohio, the guy from Michigan said he doesn't see any Hillary signs. Well, we can't put Hillary signs out because the Trump followers are a little scary. They're a little scary. And I live out in the country, but I'm an educated white lady. And I would never, ever, ever, ever vote for Trump. But that's why we don't put signs out. Just because you don't see Hillary signs out, that's probably because we really shouldn't. But it doesn't mean that we aren't going to sneak into the polls and vote for her, you know?
Linda, I appreciate your call. Henry Gomez in Cleveland, what do you make of Linda afraid to put a Clinton sign up?
Well, you know what? She's actually the Trump campaign's worst nightmare. She's from Medina County, which is one of those suburban and rural collar counties around the Cleveland media market. And those are places where those educated voters, like Linda said she is, they may not trend Republican in most presidential election years, but the Trump candidacy is a wild card here. They're not comfortable with some of the things he's saying and doing, how he's conducting himself in this campaign. And there's a sense that the Clinton campaign is going to shave some of the traditional margins in counties like Medina, in Delaware County, which is north of Columbus, and in Butler County, which is near Cincinnati. Pick off some of those college-educated voters who might be more conservative or independent, who aren't comfortable with Donald Trump. And that is what could help, offset some of the difference in those portions of the state I told you where Donald Trump is playing well.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. With Rocket Mortgage, you can get approved for a mortgage in minutes using a phone or tablet. This completely online process uses cutting-edge technology to make getting a mortgage more convenient than ever before. Now you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button without the frustration of digging through stacks of financial documents. Info at quickenloans.com/onpoint, equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the race for the White House in the home stretch now, 62 days until the November 8th election, looking at how Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are campaigning, how voters see their choice in this election. Henry Gomez is with us from Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Eli Stokols with Politico. Jennifer Duffy with the Cook Political Report. You can join us as well. What has this campaign told us about our country? Republicans, are you with Trump or you just can't do it? What do you see coming in the Clinton-Trump, Trump-Clinton debates? And how do you see the stakes for the country in this race? Lots of people, they had all four candidates and vice presidential candidates on the tarmac in Cleveland for a moment yesterday, at least. We had Joe Biden in Pittsburgh talking about, he said, Hillary Clinton, after the Obama administration bringing the country out of the recession, he says Hillary Clinton would get it up and going, the economy going 70 miles an hour.
We got the truck out of the ditch. We got it up on solid ground. The tires are inflated. The engine has been reworked. It's going 40 miles an hour. But it's capable of going 70 miles an hour.
And she would do it, says Joe Biden. Boy, he's tough on Trump. But you had Trump's, one of his lead campaign people, Kellyanne Conway, on ABC's This Week on Sunday, saying the Clinton campaign trying to focus all the attention on Trump and away from her, Hillary Clinton herself.
They want this election to be about Donald Trump, and the American people want this election to be about honesty and trustworthiness and her being more accessible and forthcoming in her responses.
Henry Gomez in Cleveland, we just got you for another minute. If you had to describe how people are deciding here, what is the choice people are making when they choose between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in terms of the direction of this country? How would you put it?
Well, I think they're making it's a tough choice because historically unfavorable candidates, but I think they're making the choice based on who they feel is going to be most trustworthy and who's going to keep the country steady, you know, out of trouble abroad and on solid footing financially and economically.
But is that really it? I mean, Donald Trump, is steadiness his calling card? He seems like a let's mix it up, blow it up guy.
Right. And I'm not sure that that's going to ultimately help him cross the finish line in Ohio, because I do feel that the other side is better organized and has a better coordinated effort to get their message out there, which is what's really going to make the difference.
Henry, do people in Ohio believe Donald Trump when he says we're going to bring jobs back? We're going to bring them back from abroad. Ohio's got a lot of experience with jobs going the other way. Do they believe that, or are they just hoping he'll find something different?
I think the people that are responding to that like hearing it in their heart of hearts. They don't necessarily believe it. But, you know, I grew up in the Youngstown area, which is in that eastern part of Ohio that Trump is targeting. And if you go there and tell an out-of-work, you know, steel worker that you're going to bring mills back, that hits an emotional point with them. I'd like to believe that a lot of voters are smart enough to realize that Trump's not going to be able to deliver on those types of promises, but it's what gets him attention, and it's something that people are responding to, at least in the short term right now.
Joe in Natick, Massachusetts. Thank you for calling, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. Listen, these polls are so disingenuous. They're absolutely nothing more than the press to control the media and make money. In other words, sell papers. There's no way this could be close when Trump can only carry the uneducated white male vote. If you go to all the other voting categories, he doesn't cover any of them. Pundits are becoming like politicians. They'll tell you how Trump's not organized, he doesn't have any ground game, Hillary's got all the commercial, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
They just go back and forth so that they keep it close, sell papers, make money. Without the press, if the truth was to come out, Hillary wouldn't have to hardly spend a dime for commercials. It's all about making money. It's totally false. It's nothing more than the media controlling our elections, which is what's happened to our elections.
Joe, we've got it. And I mean, I understand the argument you're making. And who wouldn't be, you know, suspicious? Sure, if it's a tight race, people are going to pay more attention. They're going to watch those commercials on the media. But Henry, on the front lines, does it look like that to you? I mean, on the other hand, you know, you could say to the media, hey, if this is close and you're ignoring that, that's no service to the country. What about Joe's skepticism, Henry?
Well, I think it's a point well taken, but, you know, I can only speak to what, you know, my colleagues and I here at Cleveland.com and the Play Dealer have been trying to do. We're trying to give proper context to a lot of the stuff that both of these candidates are saying. It does get tempting to turn this into a horse race all the time and point out that it's still too early. It's still too early. Anything can happen. But yeah, you know, you got to point out the organizational things because that does turnout. That does matter when it comes to turnout. You got to point out when Trump says something that's factually inaccurate or when he says something that might be seen as encouraging racism or xenophobia. And we've been doing that. And I think that, you know, you call the balls and strikes. But, you know, certainly polls give us a snapshot of where the race is at a particular moment in time.
Henry Gomez with Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer there in Cleveland. Thank you so much for being with us today, Henry.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
We've got debates coming up. Three are announced. The first one on September 26th. All the way back last September, here was Trump telling Greta Van Susteren, who now says, by the way, that she'll leave Fox, and that he would enjoy debating Hillary Clinton.
Well, I probably can think of nobody I'd rather debate. She was the worst Secretary of State in the history of this country, although I think John Kerry's going to top her with this crazy deal that he's made with Iran, which is one of the worst I've ever seen of any kind of a deal. But Hillary, until now, was the worst Secretary of State in history. I think beating her in a debate would be one of the easy challenges of my life, that I can say.
One of the easiest challenges of his life. We will see, and we'll see you soon enough. Hillary Clinton has thought about it and talked about it as well. Well, here she was in May saying she's really looking forward to a debate with Trump. She did a little bit of an impersonation of him here where she imagined him answering debate questions.
So let's suppose, here's the question. So what is your plan to create jobs? His answer is, I'm going to create them. They're going to be great. I know how to do it, but I'm not telling you what it is I'm going to do. And I'm going to say, here's the da 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 da. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do. Here's when we change the tax code. Here's how we're going to incentivize people to do it. Now, some people might say, oh, you know, all anybody wants to hear is just, I'm going to do it, but I'm not telling you what I'm going to do. See, I don't believe that.
Hillary Clinton doesn't believe that's good enough. Jennifer Duffy, we've got the first debates coming up in two or three weeks here. What is being anticipated when these two meet on that debate stage?
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, they take two very different approaches to preparing for debates, to actually debating. You know, Trump has talked about maybe not doing them all. He wants to negotiate.
Though he said just in the last 24 hours that he would do them, right? Barring,
yeah,
I don't know,
he would do
weather. Let's
see. I'll believe it when he shows up all three.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is I think that the bar for Trump is going to be fairly low, and all he needs to do is clear it. I think that the bar for Clinton is a lot higher. I think.
Now, why is that? What do you mean? What do you exactly do you mean? There's a higher bar for her?
Well, because one, she's the more experienced debater. She clearly is the more conversant on public policy. She can talk about any issue pretty much without requiring notes. And you know, Trump doesn't do that so much, and he didn't in any of the Republican debates. And the difference is that, unlike just about all of those primary debates, there's only the two of them on that stage. So I think, again, the bar is in the expectations for him is going to be lower. Now, his idea of preparing for debates is to sort of sit around and talk to them. To my knowledge, he is not doing any of the more traditional things like poring over briefing books, doing rehearsals, not really sure who's going to stand in for Clinton, whereas Clinton has now for at least a month that I'm aware of, but probably longer than that, been really focused on debate prep.
Eli Stokes, I want to bring that to you. And here was Donald Trump yesterday in Cleveland saying that he's not going to overdo his debate prep.
I'm doing some. I mean, I've seen people do so much prep work that when they get out that they can't speak. I've seen that.
And we know what he brought to the Republican primary campaign debates. Here's just from one, a little montage of insults from Donald Trump. And this is the CNN Telemundo Republican debate in February.
This guy's a choke artist and this guy's a liar. You should be ashamed of yourself. He lied 100%. When you say crazy zealot, are you talking about you? I know you're embarrassed. I know you're embarrassed, but keep fighting. Keep swinging, man. Swing for the fences.
Donald, relax.
Go ahead. I'm relaxed. You're the basket case.
You're the basket case. Eli Stokes, if he brings that kind of slashing attack to the debate with Hillary Clinton, what kind of spectacle, interaction do you foresee?
Well, I do think everybody's going to be tuning in to find out, right? These could be the most watched, the first one especially, could be the most watched presidential debate in history. Probably will be, especially given how huge the audiences were for just the primary debates, over a year ago. I think that Donald Trump, this is his nature. This is who he is. He is not somebody who's going to sit there, who has the attention span, really, to sit there and download information from briefing books on policy. But I also think that this sort of openness from him and from his associates that, oh, he's not going to do mock debates, he's just going to wing it, I think that is a bit of a head fake. I mean, that's just Kellyanne Conway, Steve Bannon, Roger Ailes, the people who are advising Donald Trump right now and sitting around on Sunday afternoons in New Jersey at his golf course having cheeseburgers and talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's a little more serious than they may let on. And yeah, he's not going to sit there and pour over tax policy. We've seen in the last week or two, he can't even get to a consistent point on immigration policy, and that was his bread and butter. So policy is not his strong suit, as I pointed out, but I do think that they are thinking about this very strategically, trying, Donald Trump was a reality television star for years.
Yeah.
Roger Ailes, right, is like him or not, was a visionary.
And he's still in there advising, even after all of his sex scandal at Fox News.
Right, and Hillary Clinton might be wise to make a point of that. But, at the end of the day, they understand, I think both campaigns understand, that this is performance art, at a very high level. Performance art without a net, right? This is a high wire act for both of them. And there's no safety net out there, and it can go wrong for either of them at any time. And so we don't know exactly what Donald Trump is thinking. But as Jennifer said, the bar for him is far lower, because with Hillary Clinton, you have a baseline expectation of competency. And with Donald Trump on the debate stage, all you know is that it's going to be interesting. If he comes out and shows even sort of, more competency, more policy fluency than we expect from him, and can make a consistent argument against Clinton that is already really there, that people already sort of see, about corruption and whatever those sort of broad strokes are. I think the Clinton folks have reason to be nervous about this, because they also, I think both campaigns understand that this first debate, really, the debates in general, but especially this first debate, might be Donald Trump's last big chance to reset and change this race before we're looking at fairly confidently looking at a Clinton victory in November.
Jennifer Duffy, if Trump comes out in the debate as the kind of insult machine, battering ram, the very, very fiery kind of language, insulting language that he used in many of the Republican debates, do you have any insight into how the Clinton people are advising her to counter that, or from her sort of character and time on the stump with Bernie Sanders and more, how you expect her to respond to that?
Well, I think that I don't have any special insight into, the details of the debate. What I do know is that they have certainly been studying debate tapes from the Republican debates, looking at how Trump goes about it, and preparing her for not only the sort of insulting nastiness, but trying to give her some tools to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect her to just sit and take it. But remember, with just the two of them on stage, it's a very different format. He's going to have, not that it will stop him, but I think he'll have a harder time being successful in interrupting, a lot of the tools he used in the Republican debate. So, I don't expect Clinton to be caught off guard by any way, and she may have a few zingers of her own to throw at him.
Ellie in Cranston, Rhode Island. Ellie, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just want to say quickly how petrified I am of the no vote, no to Trump, no to Hillary, who will either sit out the election or vote for the third party, and what this will do to screw up the election, and who will win.
You're talking about Libertarian Gary Johnson and so on, or Green Party vote. Well, our time is short. Let us look at that, Ellie. Jennifer, what about those votes? Gary Johnson, I'm seeing some places now with pretty significant support up in New Jersey. I mean, New Mexico, his home state, 20%+, and some national polls showing him around 15.
Well, remember, you know, New Mexico is his home state. He was governor there for 8 years, and a pretty successful governor, so that's not terribly surprising. But as Johnson himself will say, and this is true, is that if he can't get into the debates, it's done for him. You know, he has nowhere to go but down.
Done for him, but what about for the general election? If it in the ultimate Trump Clinton contest,
what we see is a closer general election. But we also see Johnson and Green Party candidate Jill Stein pulling from both sides. So at the end, you're going to have a winner who gets less than 50%, but in the end, I don't think it changes things. Now about voters staying home. This is something that Republicans worry about in terms of races down the ballot, Senate, House, gubernatorial, and they're working on it. You know, they're trying to reach these voters who don't want to go and remind them that, look, if you just can't vote for president, please turn out. Because what's down ballot matters and matters to the party.
Eli, we've just got half a minute here. Very, very briefly, what about a Russia card? We've got the U.S. investigating. I'm reading here headlines in the Washington Post, potential covert Russian plans to disrupt the November elections. What about a Julian Assange WikiLeaks leak in these last weeks now before the election? How seriously do people take those as potential factors?
Well, I mean, I don't know. You got to think if there was a smoking gun from Assange, he might have dropped it already. There are Trump Republicans who say, you know, that's our best shot at this point, is just hoping for some sort of wild card, because they look at the hard data and it is all so clearly in Hillary Clinton's favor. She has 700 staffers. He has less than 100. She has close to 300 field offices in the battleground states. He has fewer than 100. She's got $77 million of ad time reserved in the next 2 months. He's got zero. She spent $84 million. He spent less than $9 million already on TV ads. I mean, you know, if campaigns matter, and our history says they do, this is looking pretty imbalanced as we head into the home stretch.
Well, that's where we stand right now, 62 days until Election Day. It's been great to have both of you, Eli Stokels with Politico. Thank you so much, Eli.
Thank you.
And Jennifer Duffy at Cook Political Report. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for all your calls. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.